the State Government Finance Committee to order. Before you have in your packet the minutes from May 19th, and Representative Ward, you want to approve the minutes from May 19th?
So moved.
Representative Ward moves the minutes for May 19th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, the minutes are adopted. Members, in your packets, you have several different reports before you, dealing with the recent exchange that we've had, dealing with the Minnesota Viking Stadium, as well as the security firm that was hired by SMG and MSFA to perform those duties. We're going to start off today. I'm going to ask that Mr. Cook and Mr. Hodgson from the Private Detective Board, if you could come forward. And members, in your packet, you have their report, and it looks something like this. So if you can take that out, that will get us started for that. Mr. Cook and Mr. Hodgson, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your names for the record and who you represent, we would appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Greg Cook. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Private Detectives and Protective Agents.
My name is Richard Hodgson, H-O-D-S-D-O-N. I am one of the two citizen members of the five-person board of the Private Detectives and Protective Agents. I also, as a citizen member, I have at least one, maybe somewhere between one and five full and part-time jobs in addition to that, but I am not here speaking today in any capacity for any of those positions, but only as the board chair. So I want to make sure that everybody is aware that my life's experience may be relevant, but I'm not speaking on behalf of any of the various other activities and jobs I do.
You're a busy guy.
Well, my boss says he's going to put my face on a milk carton, but I seem to be able to get the work done, so he does not mind me taking vacation to do things like this.
Appreciate you coming today. I think it would be helpful for the members that maybe haven't been glued to this whole situation, if you can kind of walk through your report that you have here today, and then I'm going to open it up to some questions from members if they have any. So if Mr. Cook or Mr. Hodgson would like to go first, it's up to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the report that's before you is the renewal report or reissuance report regarding Monterey Security. They had a renewal that was up. And so part of what we do is put together some information regarding that firm. So as you can see in the report, we did find some discrepancies. If there's any particular discrepancy you'd like me to cover, I'd be more than happy to do so.
I think if you can just kind of walk through just the kind of the history of it, I think that would be most helpful. So if you can highlight any of the high points of discrepancies that you found, I think that would just be helpful for the public. And I should just mention this to the members. Timing-wise, we will be out of here no later than 1 o'clock. Whatever doesn't get covered here today, I'm anticipating that we will have another hearing to go over some more issues. I know there's other entities that would like to provide further information on this whole thing, too. So this is not a one-day event. We will probably have other committee hearings, too. So if you go home and you think of questions at that time, too, just know that you'll have another opportunity to ask those questions at a later time. Okay?
Go ahead. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, if I may, I think I'm going to start with just summarizing the discrepancies found. During the course of doing our research, we found a lack of pre-assignment training for staff being completed or done in a timely manner. And so the committee members understand pre-assignment training consists of 12 hours, and it is actually outlined in our core objectives, in which employees of protective agents and protective agents and security guards need to understand Minnesota laws and some of the things pertaining to conducting security in the industry. There was a lack of continuing training for staff. So annually, protective agents and their employees need to take 6 hours of continuing education. We found that there were some non-certified instructors that were teaching some of the courses. There was a certification program for both the instructors and the courses that are being taught. There was a lack of timely and completed background checks among those employees. We did find some employees being hired with disqualifying criminal records. There was a lack of identification cards being issued to protective agent staff. There was a discrepancy found in the number of employees reported to us. We did find that Monterey's definition of what a protective agent is was somewhat contradictory to what the statutes state. There was a false statement made to the board by Juan Gaetan regarding the busing in of employees from out of state, and there was a possible altercation of records. So upon getting into looking at this, And how we do renewals in general is that we go through their packet and understand Monterey had a lot of employees. We will examine their packet, and we will send back to them what the issues are that we find. And I think you'll find in the report their responses to those issues, and they are related to some of the discrepancies found. Let's flip ahead here. We did come across five employees that did have disqualifying criminal records. We did come across an individual named Ricky Pouncil. So I was actually sent a picture of Mr. Pouncil from one of our license holders who had worked on a case that involved Mr. Pouncil in the past. And Mr. Pouncil is seen in the picture wearing a Monterey security shirt. And he looks to be on the field of the Viking Stadium. In researching Mr. Pouncil, he actually had a conviction for coercion and some bribery and some things like that, blackmailing. I actually attempted to contact, I did contact Mr. Pouncil, and he did state that he was there at the stadium, and he said he was there as a friend of a friend. We did not see Mr. Pouncil's name on any documents provided by Monterey. And so, therefore, we put this in the report as one of the examples of somebody working at the stadium with disqualifying records. In the job description portion of the report, it seems to be that Monterey didn't believe that some of their people working for them were doing protective agent services. In other words, as you're going into the stadium, you might have somebody check your bags or check your purse. You might have somebody who's monitoring a magnometer machine, the scanning device that people walk through. There's other people that are utilizing what's called metal detection wands, directional wands. There's other people that were working at access points, checking credentials. And there was somewhat of a conflict in what the board and the statutes say regarding that versus what Monterey thought that was. And so, therefore, if somebody's not a protective agent, they didn't believe that person had to go through the background checks and the training and get the ID card issued. And those are the three main parts when it comes to an employee of a protective agent or a license holder, is the training, the background check, and the ID cards. I did also provide in the report the U.S. Bank Stadium's policy regarding security policies and procedures, and you can see in there how it lists several times the tasks of event staff and security staff during the course of an event. I did have an opportunity to visit the U.S. Bank Stadium during a Monday night football game on September 11th. And I was provided full credentials. I was able to go to every part of the stadium except the field. And my observations were that I saw a number of individuals wearing red shirts that said Monterey Event Ambassadors. I observed these individuals checking bags. I observed them operating various metal detection devices. I observed them at control access points. And I had an opportunity to actually talk to them. I probably talked to 20 or 30 of them. And predominantly, when I asked them, you know, I'd go up to them, what's an event ambassador? And they would say, well, we're security. Further discussions with them, I found there was a baseball team that came out of Mason City, Iowa, that was called a volunteer group. There was a team that the College of St. Cloud, a wrestling team, a swimming team, and these were all called volunteer groups. And discussing with them what their background check process was in training, it was basically that they said signed a form, but they didn't submit fingerprints. So part of the background checks that have to be done on a protective agent or their employees is an FBI and a BCA background check, and that consists of fingerprints. So it seemed to me that they weren't having fingerprints done at that point. I asked them what their training was, and they said an hour or two training. And again, predominantly asking, what do you do when they were here doing security? I also observed them enforcing policies. There were times when people were trying to walk out of the stadium, say, with an alcoholic beverage, or they were smoking in the wrong area, or they're trying to get out and come back in, and they were enforcing those policies. I did come across a group that was actually from Chicago. So I talked to a number of them, and I ended up throughout the night talking to these people, and I made sure at the end of the event, I followed the people that identified from Chicago to approximately two or three blocks away where there were two buses waiting for them, and I actually interviewed the bus driver. And what was happening was he would pick up these individuals in Chicago at Soldiers Field at 5 o'clock. This is what he told me. He would drive them up to the event. They would work the event. In the meantime, he'd go to a hotel and get some sleep. And then he would pick them up after the event and drop them back into Chicago. And this was contradictory to a statement made by Mr. Gaetan at a previous meeting when he said he would not be busing people in from Chicago and hadn't been. And talking to these people, some of them stated that he actually had been since they had received the contract. Part of our process also was we sent out a survey to all 1,200 past and present Monterey employees. And some of the comments you can see in your report display some of the discrepancies that were discussed at the beginning of the of my presentation. Upon all this information, there's also some emails regarding their challenges in getting staff 5 days before a game and the different groups they were going to use to do that. There's an email there stating something regarding one could ascertain or question them further regarding possible altercation of records. We did come across one of the processes was we wanted to look at some invoices. So I contacted SMG and the Maslon Law Firm, and they allowed us to review these invoices. And it was a binder about 4 inches thick. We could not take any photocopies or make copies of it, and we went through them, and we were kind of looking for the job description part of this thing because that seemed to be a common denominator. And we did come across an individual on a July, I think, 29th, 2017 invoice that we knew for a fact had been terminated the previous January, and that brought up the question regarding the billing. I would have to defer to SMG and their attorneys for any further description on that situation. So upon completing this report, my job is to provide it to the board. So my job as executive director is to provide the board information so they can make decisions. And at the last board meeting, the board took that information. They also utilized the SMG report, and that is when they made their decision regarding Monterey. That's all I have for you this time, Madam Chair.
Okay. And Mr. Hodson, did you want to add anything at all?
That's a pretty good summary in terms of the workflow process. This was the first renewal. Licenses are valid for 2 years, are subject to a renewal process of the description that Mr. Cook articulated. In addition to his findings, we had an extensive interview presentation asking of questions by the principal executive officer of Monterey at the renewal hearing, and as a result of some of the answers we got in that context and their consistency or lack thereof with other information that had been provided during the initial licensing process, that was additional grounds for the board to take the action it did. I would emphasize that we are dealing, however, as a licensing board, only with licensing. Whether or not this company ever had worked for, gotten a contract to provide U.S. Bank Stadium security, none of that would have changed. What prompted the intersection between the U.S. Bank Security and the licensing board is the extent, the business model, if you will. If someone had done same kind of activities but used properly trained, met all the obligations that Mr. Cook previously mentioned, in all likelihood, those deficiencies or discrepancies would have not been caused for our board, in my opinion, as one of the five votes, to take action. Now, those discrepancies led to additional investigation, which led to some questions about the initial application, but that's a different story. We don't license ever as a board somebody to provide security for a particular entity. It's like if you want a driver's license to drive for Jimmy John's, you get a license from the state of Minnesota. You can drive for Jimmy John's or for your personal use or for any other business that wants to hire you to do it. So we don't license anything for any kind of specific venue or work or activity.
Okay. All right. I've got Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, gentlemen, for being here this morning. We really appreciate it. I have a number of questions. The first question that I have is, are the type and scale of the problems that have been identified with Monterey and the stadium as an outlier when it comes to your experience, relative to hiring security firms in Minnesota?
Mr. Cook?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we've only had the opportunity really to dig deeper in some of these situations. I to get to the point, there's a staff of two with our agency, and I've currently lost my admin, but it's a staff of two. So how much work we can put into looking at some of these things depends on what red flags are shot up, what happens, what information we receive. If you're asking if this is persistent among the industry, that would take some more research to find out. You know, when we do have an issue, when information is brought to our attention, we do do a report, we do provide it to the board, and the board does take action.
Representative Butte.
Yes, thank you. So what red flags, in your opinion, could have or should have been identified? You know, it's obvious, you know, in plain sight from the research that I've done and have had presented to me, as well as just, you know, simple Google search. I mean, it's obvious that there were many red flags that should have been to me, but I'm wondering what your opinion is on that.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative. That is a good question. You know, on the outset, you're just seeing people wearing red shirts, you know, conducting security services, and you don't know their background. You might not know their criminal background. I would like to see clients that hire these security firms to themselves ask questions as to the backgrounds and actually see the background reports of the employees, but that's incumbent upon them. There have been a couple instances at the U.S. Bank Stadium, the deal where they were rappelling down from the ceiling, and there was another situation where actually one of their guards was wearing an ankle bracelet because of terroristic threats, I think, to the FBI. I think those might have shot up some red flags to look further.
Can you say that? Did I hear you correctly? Could you say that piece again?
Which part, ma'am?
The ankle bracelet?
Yes, there was a Monterey security officer that actually was wearing an ankle bracelet because he was making terroristic threats to the FBI. And That story was actually in the papers. That was probably about a year ago.
Okay, I missed that.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, I have reviewed, albeit, you know, in a cursory way, the 47-page report that you referenced, and there's a ton of detail in here that have now identified, you know, really what, in my opinion, what those red flags could have and should have been. And I just wanted to highlight that one of the documents that you included on page 38 and 39 was a survey of that you sent out to 1,245, I have noted, to all past and present Monterey employees. And I found it very curious to see that the agency only received 28 responses to date. Not sure exactly what date this was published, but, you know, of those 28 responses, I just wanted to highlight a couple of the comments from employees. I know as a former general manager for a Dayton's with 400 employees, the most significant amount of feedback and something I always took very seriously was feedback that came from my employees. It was always shared with me in a confidential manner, and I was shocked to see what I saw on page 39. Did you take a pre-assignment training class prior to providing services for Monterey? Did not receive certification until later. Then the next question was, have you ever carried a firearm or weapon? Handcuffs, baton, mace, etc., while on the job? If so, please list the weapons you carried. The response was there were employees and Monterey relatives from Chicago that carried weapons. The third question was, any other comments you would like to provide? This response was Monterey Security willingly hired employees with a criminal felon background. When brought to their attention, it was ignored, and employees remained in supervisory positions. And then lastly, if you're no longer employed with Monterey, please explain why. And the response was, after repeatedly advising management that the required background checks related to hiring security staff were not being followed, they decided to end my employment after 2 months. And so I'm assuming this maybe isn't a statistically significant number of responses relative to the employees that to whom this survey was sent, but it's very concerning to me, this feedback. So do you have any comments about that? I have one other follow-up question, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative. And again, this is part of us trying to piece together the puzzle. And so one of the challenges was actually finding out that the actual number of employees that had worked for him, and that was one of the reasons for the survey, if, you know, addresses bounced back or something like that, we might figure out. I was disappointed in the response, you know, 28 out of all of them. But, you know, a lot of these people, you can understand the industry in general, especially the event staff industry in general, has a high turnover rate, probably, you know, more than 50%. People move around a lot, this and that, so a lot of the survey might not even have gotten to some people. But I thought it was important, feedback for the report, to get the employees' feedback, as you state, because I've worked on the private sector myself, and you know the importance of employees' comments. You know, they're on the inside, and you have to understand that we were kind of doing this research on the outside. So this is our way of trying to find out more information.
Representative.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And so just one last question relative to the decisions that have already been made for going forward. Relative to the two companies that have been secured, Whalen and G4S, and I'm wondering to what degree Minnesotans can have confidence that they will be fully, you know, fully compliant with security statutes. Do you have any, you know, response to that, please?
Mr. Cook?
Madam Chair, Representative, both Whalen and G4S have been long-time license holders. Whalen has been doing event staff for a very long time. So in general, when it comes to license holders, you know, we are only really looking at them every 2 years at the renewal time, unless something happens that causes us to look further. And, you know, they came in at credit to SMG and to the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority to get that change made. I can tell you the BCA worked very, very hard in order to get all the background checks processed to make the following Sunday's game happen, make sure everybody that got in there had the right credentials to do it. I have been in constant contact with both Billy Langenstein of the U.S. Bank Stadium, of SMG, excuse me, and of Jess Brendall of Whalen and Kevin Stewart of G4S. We've had many conversations. I've explained to them the importance of what they're doing, and I explained to them that they'll be under a microscope. And I've gone over the things from our end as far as statutory requirements of what they have to meet. Have I gone in and audited them for this? No, I have not. But I am there for them. I've been trying to have discussions with them, explaining them the importance of it. I cannot, I've only been with the board 5 years. To my mind, I have no serious disciplinary history that I think has come up with either one of those entities. You know, we could go back and look 20 years, and I could prepare a report if you'd like, but nothing comes to mind as far as any problems with those companies at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. And, Madam Chair, I have one last question.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, you know, in my observation, Minnesota has been on the radar of national security experts for some time. And I'm wondering to what degree the security, the entities that are going to be managing the security for Minnesota, for the facility going forward, are working in collaboration with any national security entities, any individuals. I would please like to know and have a comfort level that, in fact, they are.
Mr. Cook?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, there is actually a number of federal and state agencies working, especially with the U.S. Bank Stadium and the upcoming Super Bowl. I have not been part of those meetings, but I know they've been having weekly or monthly meetings going back probably 6 months. I think SMG and the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority can address that a little better. But I do know there is a great amount of resources being put into the safety and security of U.S. Bank Stadium for the upcoming Super Bowl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your response.
Madam Chair, if I might add a clarification.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Hodson.
To your question, Representative, I hate these old analogies, but this really is from a security of a particular venue, event, activity, it truly is a three-legged stool, and we're probably not even a balanced three-legged stool because the board provides licensing to a few hundred license holders, and nevertheless, the actual boots on the ground are 9,000 people. Mr. Cook is trying to regulate an industry of over 9,000 people with a budget of less than $200,000 a year and two staff at full staff, and now he's down one. So we can only provide the regulatory framework to make sure that the licensees themselves every two-year basis are doing what they do, unless we get a complaint. The other two parts of the legs are the integrity of the license holders, that they're going to do what they tell us they're doing If they say they've got 700 people that are providing security, that they're backgrounding them, they're training them, they're vetting them. And then the other is some responsibility. The third leg of the stool is the owner or the contractor of the venue, whether it's a baseball game, a football game, a sporting event, a concert. There is some requirement by those venue providers, I think. And if a venue provider thought, okay, as long as somebody's licensed, then we don't have to worry about it, I'm not sure they would be doing their due diligence. And I'm not suggesting. There are a lot of venue providers that go far, in my limited experience as a civilian member, they go far above and beyond the requirements of our limited licensing area. But it really is a three-part cooperative process.
I've got Representative Johnson, Uglem, and Quam. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifiers, Monterey security clearly needed to be given a boot based on the problems that I've read in the report, the extensive irregularities. But just to be clear to the public, they are no longer providing security. They were there from, if I understood it right, March of 16 to just this last September 26 of 2017. So they're not involved in any way in providing oversight of security. You can just answer yes, I guess, if that's good. Do I have that understood correctly?
Mr. Cook.
Madam Chair, Representative, to my knowledge, Monterey is not operating in the state of Minnesota currently. Their licensing period, they got originally licensed in July of 2015. This was their last, either the renewal period. We just came to the end of it with the contingency regarding this. But to my knowledge, they are not currently providing services in the state of Minnesota. And if somebody knows something otherwise, I would be happy to take that information.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just to the issue I think that's really important, upcoming is the Super Bowl. And it's my understanding that this is a number one federal event, and this will be taken over by Homeland Security and not one of the two firms that are currently licensed to provide U.S. Bank security. But could you provide a little bit more clarity on that, please?
Mr. Cook.
Madam Chair, Representative. So this is kind of a unique situation. So it happens during the Super Bowl. My understanding is the NFL actually comes in and takes over the stadium. The NFL, in turn, will hire a general contractor for security. And in this situation, it is Safe Management is the name of the company. That company will then hire a subcontract out to other security firms here in Minnesota. They're trying to get on board about 3,000 people for this. As far as the federal level of who's overseeing this, I'm not sure if it's Homeland Security. I would imagine it's Homeland Security, FBI, something like that. I know they're all involved, but I don't know who the top person is on the federal level.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just lastly, it's my understanding that the NFL executives are in town this week to begin vetting some of the processes involved in providing security for the Super Bowl event. Is that correct, too, that they're already beginning that process, to your understanding?
Mr. Cook?
Madam Chair, Representative, I have not been made aware of that. The NFL has not contacted me during this whole process or regarding the Super Bowl, so I do not know.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Uglem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, gentlemen, I'm certainly happy that you're on the job and looking after all of our interests here in the state of Minnesota. Obviously, this is a very serious matter. We learn from history. We don't want to repeat the same mistakes twice. And with the national events in Las Vegas and the upcoming Super Bowl, it's important that we get this right 100% in terms of what's going on, and obviously it's a big target. It's incumbent on all of us, not just Democrats or Republicans, but all of us to do the very best job that we can in the future. My question to you is what oftentimes in detective work and everything else, there's a tip-off that comes. What predicated your investigation? How did you make this different from an ordinary renewal? Was there some information that was provided you?
Mr. Cook?
Madam Chair, Representative. So understand that there's Minnesota data privacy laws, mainly Chapter 13, so there's certain things I cannot discuss. Okay. I can discuss the renewal and the renewal process and information found during that renewal process, but I cannot discuss pursuant to Chapter 13 and some data privacy laws.
Okay. Madam Chair. Well, thank you. I think I really understand now. But it's good that this happened, and our concern, of course, and Representative Johnson, you talked about this a little bit. I mean, now we're going forward, and we have to make sure that the new entity is crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Uglum. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is probably for Mr. Cook. When you've got someone with a license for 2 years, do you have a process for suspension or revocation if information comes before you? And if you do have a process, can you pass that offline to the committee? If not, maybe contact me and we can see if we need legislation to give you authority to be able to do this in the interim, because that might have been useful. And I got a couple real quick ones. How many actual individuals and guests, because it appears as if it's a larger group than what's listed in the background document. You know, if they have all these volunteer groups that are coming in, and you've got a bunch of extra people with shirts on that, oh, I'm not an employee, I'm a guest. It'd be nice to know if we have an idea what that set of people is, and that can be provided offline if you don't have it on your off the tip of your tongue. And the last little thing is there are five employees disqualifying offenses. What were the disqualifying offenses for the public record?
Mr. Cook.
Madam Chair, Representative, while I'm looking for this, I can educate you a little bit more on the process involving revocations and serious stuff. So my job as executive director is to provide information to the board. And depending on the seriousness of it, I then, from the direction of the board, we'll either continue with a research or an investigation, or the board might find it serious enough to contact law enforcement, which we've had some unlicensed activity cases involved with that. Understand with revocation, and actually any penalty over $499, there is a process. They have a right, the license holder has a right to a contested case hearing with OAH, and have to go through that process. The top monetary fine that we can penalize somebody for is $2,500. But it is, an arduous process when you're getting into revocation and denial of an application and things like that. As I skip ahead to find the particulars on your question what was your other question again, sir? There was a thing about, how many people work the stadium as far as security goes?
Representative
Kwan. Madam Chair, through the discussion in the report, there were workers, there were ambassadors, there were guests that had Monterey T-shirts on. It appears to be a larger pool than what probably is indicated as actual employees officially. And it'd be nice to find out that number. And we don't need that now, but that's the kind of thing if you had in additional information.
I'd like to.
And Mr. Cook, he's also looking for the offenses of the five individuals that
you're. Right. Yes. So as far as the particular offenses, I don't have them mentioned here, and I don't have that file with me. I do know in talking to one of the individuals, it was a gun offense, and I think there was a narcotics offense. But I do not have that information with me right now, because I just brought this copy of my report. So. And I can provide you those numbers at a later time, sir.
And Representative Kwan?
Just as long, Madam Chair, as long as we have actually for the record what offenses there were, I'd like to know what background we were handing the keys to the stadium to, what background of some of these people were.
Sure. And Mr. Cook, if you just want to send it to my staff, we'll disseminate it to the committee as a whole and have that posted on our
website. Madam Chair, absolutely. Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair, I can answer his first question for
Mr.
the record if you'd like.
Yes. Please.
Representative, as I say, I'm a citizen member, but don't hold it against me, but I do happen to practice law as well. And I was the post board's first lawyer back a bazillion years ago, so I'm familiar with the administrative process and have done this a long time, ever since I was 10 years old, apparently. And there is no provision, unfortunately, from an emergency suspension standpoint under current law. We have examined that, and several licensing boards have looked at that over the years, including that's a discussion we've had, and not, frankly, unique to Monterey. We have had other cases in Murray. I've I'm the new kid on the block, except for one other person. I'm the second newest board member, having been appointed to a full term only in January of 2014. But this notion of emergency suspension, emergency revocations, the board doesn't have that authority under existing statute. The board members have a wish list of things that we would like to have from a statutory authority to enhance the ability to provide safety and security to the people of the state of Minnesota. That's one of them, and I'd be happy to give you that wish list, too, as an individual. I'm not speaking because we haven't voted on this as a board, but absolutely that might be something that the legislature wants to look at some point going forward.
Representative Kwan? Representative Greed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to testifiers. I'm going to be just a little bit redundant because I'd like some stuff cleared up for me, if no one else. It seemed to me that there's an appearance that this company was trying to skirt around the regulations that are in place, even for their own licensing and for the people working at the stadium or wherever they happen to be working. And so my question for you is, security staff versus event ambassadors. Is there a classification for an event ambassador? And if so, what is it?
Mr. Cook.
Madam Chair, Representative, there is no classification for an event ambassador. There's a classification. In our statutes, it defines a security guard, it defines a protective agent, but nowhere in our statutes does it mention event ambassador.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then, so this is looks like a made-up word to me. It looks like a made-up position to fill a hole with someone who's not qualified or hasn't gone through the testing. The other question that I had is, in the past, have you ever come across any other entities that would hire 597 people and then get background checks on 298 of them and do the testing after they were already employed?
Mr. Cook.
Madam Chair, Representative, not with those numbers. We've had some, I'll call it unlicensed activity, where a security company tried to call their employees security monitors. So they were monitoring and they weren't doing stuff. So if they saw something, they were going to report it, but they weren't doing security. But we have not had that I've seen with those numbers, no, sir.
Representative?
No, that's not. Thank you.
I just, for the two of you, what has stuck out to me on some of the things that you guys have said is we probably wouldn't be at this point had it not been for maybe some information that was provided to you guys. And so it's kind of, Mr. Hodson, I think you said this is incumbent upon the people that are the clients of these firms to be asking questions, right? And so because I'm understanding it, you're the three-legged stool, but you're just the first gate, and then there's the second and the third gate that makes it kind of the bigger issue. And if the second and the third gate aren't, you know, doing their role of asking questions, that's where you run into problems. Am I summarizing it correctly, or what would you say to that?
Madam Chair, I think that's a good way to put it. It's like any other licensed profession. By having a license, it means, at least based on all the representations, statements, evidence you've submitted, you met the professional credentials, whether that's security or doctors or lawyers or any of the other 55, 60, 70 regulated licensing boards we have in Minnesota, licensing pursuant to Chapter 214, whether the health board or whether they're a non-health licensing board. All that this agency can do, given its resources, is say this person or this corporation, because most of our licensees, frankly, are not individuals, they are corporations. This corporation has met all the credentials that are established by law at this point, but we know in our lives experience, we probably know lots of individuals who are licensed to do something, but the St. Croix River would freeze to the bottom before we would ever hire them because of what we know about them in terms of their ability. And that's based on the vetting and the research of the purchaser of the services. There's lots of lawyers that, in all candor, I would never hire. There's some doctors I'd avoid like the plague, but they still can have their lawyer license and they still have their doctor license. And there's some analogy there. Just because someone has a license doesn't mean that a vendor should ignore their responsibilities for due diligence. And I don't want to put that off on somebody, but that's the business reality of how licensing works in Minnesota.
And would you say, Mr. Hodson, that it's fair to say that everybody that is in the business of having security firms has that understanding? This is just, they filled out the form, they checked the boxes, but this doesn't mean that there isn't other things that you should consider.
Especially since 9/11, Madam Chair, I think the world is very different. There are more people in this country today that provide security that are private sector employees than are government officials. And for any foreseeable future, I don't see how that's changing. But that means the consumers have a huge disparity, in my experience, and again, speaking as a citizen member only, in terms of their sophistication. You have a private sector entity like Xcel Energy, who has got private security guarding very sensitive critical structures, extremely, extremely familiar and experienced. The level of vetting and depth and the work they do to make sure their security people are quality and competency. And then you move on to somebody else who might be looking at the lowest responsible bidder, and then you have somebody else who's got even less level of sophistication. That's partly a matter of consumer education as our world has changed. And there are things that we can do to help educate. This forum, hopefully, for anybody who pays attention to what we're talking about today, if they're a consumer of private security, they might start to think about that. I hope they do.
And Mr. Cook, do you guys give any kind of disclaimer that this doesn't mean that, you know, beyond this, they've just checked the boxes, or is that something that's not part of the process?
Madam Chair, that is not part of the process. Would you agree with me, Board Chair?
I would, Madam Chair. What the board certifies is these people have met the licensing credentials based on the information provided and the research done. Can people deceive the board? Yes, they can. We like to think that doesn't happen very often. I know in the most recent renewal there was some people have described my approach to asking some questions of the corporate representatives. I saw one article that described it as a cross-examination almost of the licensee. That's not typically how we proceed. That's because we operate in, assuming everybody's operating in good faith here. A large number of the people, everybody who applies for a license itself, they have to have at least 6,000 hours of experience in the industry and or have been in law enforcement. And so we like to think that people that have been through that process already, they've been vetted by their prior employers, they have been vetted by FBI, they've been BCA, local police, sheriff's offices. And so I think we I know my bias, given a law enforcement prosecution background, I like to take those people at their word. And 99% of the time, I'm, at least as far as I know so far, it's probably worked out. Unfortunately, that doesn't always work. But we do try.
Thank you both. If you can stay, just in case there's any questions that pop up.
Absolutely.
Or at least one of you, if you would. So thank you for coming.
Madam Chair, committee members.
Members, I think we're going to have SMG, if you could come. Mr. Talty. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you. My name is Patrick Talty. It's T-A-L-T-Y, and I'm the general manager for SMG at U.S. Bank Stadium.
Thank you for coming before the committee. If you just kind of want to briefly give a brief overview of the Maslin report, I think that would be helpful for members. If you can kind of just summarize the highlights, much like Mr. Cook did, I think that would be helpful. And then I'm going to open it to questions from members, if you would.
Madam Chair, thank you. Absolutely. We actually initiated a parallel investigation to the Board of Private Detective Agents with our outside independent counsel, Maslin. And their findings when we did the research was that Monterey used ambiguous terms for their positions, VIN ambassador versus security guard. There were individuals who had disqualifying incidences on their backgrounds. They did not maintain accurate records in their training. We could not find and piece together the records that the training was completed by all individuals. They also did not follow all of the pre-employment screenings for backgrounds that were required by the Yes.
Ma'am. And I'm just going to pause you for 1 second. I just want to make sure members are aware. The Maslin report is in your folder, so if you want to follow along through that, please do. Mr. Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I may back up because I may repeat myself here. We found that they had individuals who had not been submitted to background checks. We also found that their training records were not kept up properly, as well as individuals had not been met the minimum standard for training, as well as our contractual obligations that we had with them. And then we also detected potential billing irregularities in the that they had been performing with us.
Thank you, Mr. Tolte. I've got Representative Ugulum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Mr. Telfy. I'm glad you're here this morning going over all of this. My biggest concerns are with the RFP process as it stands today and how it stood when you hired Monterey. What differences now have you included in the request for proposals for hiring a new firm, and how are we learning from our mistakes that happened in the past?
Mr. Falvey.
Madam Chair, Representative, personally addressed the Wayland and G4S that we currently have employed were part of the original RFP process back in 2016. We went back to the people who had been part of the original RFP to execute these current contract, because they are fulfilling the remainder of Monterey's contract that was awarded during the original RFP process. We have actually, in our contract, strengthened our audit provision with them. We have put in, we have more clarity into their operation. We have more stronger audit rights to execute audits with them. We also are working with them right now, much like you said, in terms of what we've learned, working with them to be more transparent. We are working with them to do independent random audits, if you will, of their employees and their records. Additionally, Wayland and G4S also employ a third-party record-keeping company to maintain their records for them. And as the Mr. Cook mentioned, Wayland and G4S have been long-term license holders in the state of Minnesota, so they've gone through their process of renewal several times. Your other part of the question about the RFP process, you know, our RFP process was a very thorough, data-driven process. It was 5 months long. It included several interviews, two rounds of interviews, actually. We did site visits of all the different companies. We traveled to different places to visit them in their operations. We spoke to individuals who had them working for them, you know, during had been clients for a long time, short time. You know, we obviously in the proposals, we asked for a lot of detail in terms of how could they execute not only hiring enough people, but then also executing the security plans and the processes that we had put together.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Tolte.
Representative Ugulum.
Madam Chair, yes. Going back to the original debacle, if we will, I guess, when Monterey was hired and the RFP went out and when Monterey was hired, was the whole board involved with the hiring? How did that hiring process occur, and what kind of review? I mean, for instance, were you given a report? Was the entire board given a report and a full meeting called to award this contract to Monterey?
Representative Ugulum, when you say board, are you referring to SMG, the company, or are you referring to the Minnesota Sports Facility?
The Minnesota Sports Facility Association, yeah.
Mr. Talty.
Madam Chair, Representative, during the RFP process, it was a committee that was formed up of individuals from the Minnesota Vikings, individuals of my staff, as well as a member of the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority. staff, and we kept the Sports Authority as well as other members of the Vikings updated as we went through the process. There was not a full meeting of the board. The board did get an opportunity to meet with Monterey and the individuals at a board meeting. They presented, but there was not, under our contract, we sent an approval to the authority, which was approved by the executive director at the time, under the which is allowed in our contract, our management agreement with them.
Representative,
I'm sure. So the contract was approved by the executive director and not the full board.
Mr. Tolte.
Madam Chair, Representative, that is correct.
Representative Uglum.
Madam Chair, what kind of review and what kind of correspondence did the executive director do in this hiring process?
Mr. Tolte.
Madam Chair, Representative, during this entire process, as I mentioned, it was a five-month, very extensive process that had a lot of different back-and-forth discussions with all the companies. I would meet with the executive director on a regular basis, talk about this topic as well as many other topics, and kept them up to speed, as well as we also met with the former chair, Michelle Kelm-Helgen, and kept her up to speed as well on the different aspects of the different companies that were bidding.
Representative Uglum?
Madam Chair, so again, I just need to know this. So the executive director made this decision on his own. You met with him, and other people met with him, and I'm sure you're doing a very good job over there. But there was no formal board action. There was no vote taken. The executive director took it upon himself to provide the contract to Monterey. Is that correct?
Mr. Tolte.
Madam Chair, Representative, I can't speak directly to what the executive director did that in terms of in talking to the board or not, and that I wasn't part of that. I can tell you that outlined in our management agreement that we have to get approval for those contracts from the MSFA, and it's outlined in our contract that approval comes from the executive director. I don't know the level of involvement that he had kept up to the board. As I mentioned, the board, Monterey, did present at one of the monthly board meetings for the Minnesota Sports and Facilities Authority.
Madam Chair.
Representative Uglum.
But again, there was no formal board vote taken to approve Monterey. It was just the executive director. Is that right?
Mr. Tolte.
Madam Chair, Representative, I personally don't remember one, but you would probably want to check with the Minnesota Sports and Facilities Authority to be sure that there wasn't any action taken.
Okay. Representative Uglum.
Madam Chair. All right. Now, with turning the page forward here with our new hires, Waylon and G4, how is this process handled this time around, or did you just simply take the next security firm that was in line with the old RFP?
Mr. Tolte.
Madam Chair, Representative, when we were doing this investigation and we knew that the board had given a contingent license to Monterey in their July meeting, we went ahead, we discussed it with the authority, and with the authority and us, we decided that we would start to look at alternate plans, if you will, in case Monterey's license was revoked, because that was a possibility. Also, we were preparing if the report came back negative, we were preparing ourselves to be ready. We went back and actually spoke to a couple different firms that were a part of the original RFP. We had discussions with them. We informed Monterey that we were actually doing this, that we were looking at other options to have a backup plan as a contingency. And we worked with the firms that were in the original RFP and ended up with Waylon and G4S. And I think one thing that's important as background, Madam Chair, is that originally the RFP was sent out for two different areas, 24/7 security and the event security. It was Monterey won both of those. We wanted to have one company do that. This time around, we've separated those two contracts in order to make sure that we aren't left with when one company has an issue that we have an issue that we have a problem.
Madam Chair, that's probably a good idea too. Really, I guess another question here is basically you mentioned that in the new arrangement with Wayland and G4 that they will be subject to snap audits or interim audits and all of that. Is that formalized in the contract language?
Mr. Tolte.
Madam Chair, Representative. As I mentioned, we had strengthened our audit provision, and to allow us to do audits in general, it does not spell out when we can and time frames. We felt it would be better to have the provision, and we can invoke that provision when we see necessary. I will also tell you very, Wayland and G4S have been very upfront and do not want to be in the situation that Monterey was in. They want to be very transparent and work with us very openly and provide us access into their records so that we can be assured that they are providing the services as we have expected in our contract.
Madam Chair, one final.
Representative.
Well, I appreciate that, and I know a lot of times the public looks at some of these things and they say, well, it's a good old boy network, and we're awarding these contracts based on really reputation and friendship and so on and so forth. I'm glad to see that that's not happening, or doesn't appear to be happening in this case. And I applaud you for coming here today to take the heat for some of this. It's very important that we get this right for the future here. And as one of the former testifiers talked about, since 911, things have changed a great deal. And we have to get this right. Thank you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up on your company's internal audit procedures and how something like this could go on for a while and not be part of the procedures that would have caught it sooner so that the money wouldn't have been paid out, especially when there seems to be such egregious things to find.
Mr. Tolte.
Madam Chair, Representative, one clarifying question for you. Are you referring to the Maslin report or are you referring to some other audit? I'm sorry, I just want to make sure.
Representative Vogel.
Madam Chair and Mr. Tolte, what I'm looking for is you're a company that has to have procedures in place. So what procedures, what policies do you have in place as a company? Now, granted, we're looking at the security firm, but there's other things that you do as well. So I guess the question is then, what type of policies, procedures do you have internally that's looking at whether it's this now that we know about or possibly anything else that would occur so that this stuff gets caught earlier while maybe you can still do something about it rather than waiting? So it isn't a report. It's an internal policy procedure question.
Mr. Tolte, so it was alluded to by Mr. Cook and Mr. Hodson, the issue that came up with the whole billing anomalies, and then, of course, the Maslin report talks about that too. So I think that's what Representative Vogel is getting at. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Madam Chair, Representative Vogel, I think it's important to one of the things that's important to remember is this contract operated exactly how it's supposed to operate. We had red flags pop up. We saw that there was an investigation by the State Board of Detective Agents, as well as there was a news report that Monterey, they had a whistleblower report that was in the media. We immediately launched into an investigation and an audit, and the contract worked exactly how it's supposed to be, that we have those rights. We also, during this time, the stadium had been open 10 months. During our normal course of business, we evaluate all of our processes and our contractors as we get ready to enter into the next event season. We had been operating for, a very short time, and we were starting those processes of looking at all of our processes and efficient and looking at them for efficiencies. We, as a company, are constantly reviewing and looking and learning from every event that we do. I believe one of the representatives earlier mentioned that we need to learn from the past, and that's what we do for every single event that we do. We look at how can we be better, how can we make things better. Every contract that we do, every incident like this, we look at and we see what can we do better, what can we make sure that doesn't happen again. And that's what we're doing, and that's what we've done.
Representative Ogle.
Madam Chair. Okay, Mr. Talty. And I appreciate that, but I guess I'm looking at, you know, in any business, especially something as large as what this operation is, I would think that you would have internal audit and control policies that would mandate certain procedures to be done, whether it's looking at the security or any other of the other entities that you're managing. And that's the question is, do you have written policies and procedures relative to your internal audit as well as the reporting that goes with those so that the people that are actually signing a contract with you have knowledge of what's going on, because not only are you implementing what they're doing, but you're telling them exactly how well the implementation is going.
Mr. Tulte?
Madam Chair, Representative, we have lots of processes as a company as a whole. You know, we manage six NFL facilities, and we have a lot of different, you know, audits, I guess, as you mentioned, and processes that we review our vendors, and we have expectations that we allow to our vendors. We have an operations manual that we've developed, and we provide those operations manuals and the expectations to our vendors. As I mentioned, one of the things Monterey was terminated the contract was because they did not live up to those expectations that were in the contract. They weren't following those, and we took action and terminated those because we expect them to follow what we have written down in contracts as well as in our processes and procedures.
Representative Ogle.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Talty, I guess further questioning, you know, we're going in different directions here, and I appreciate what you did, but it took an outside source to inform you of the process that you had to implement. And I guess going forward as a management firm, my hope would be that whether it's security or anything else that you're managing for the stadium would also have internal audit procedures and policies that would catch this stuff before somebody from the outside tells us to look at it. So thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Talty, looking back, is there anything you would do differently in this whole process? You know, hindsight can educate us, but looking back, what would you do differently?
Mr. Talty.
Madam Chair, Representative, you know, when we were going through the RFP process at the time with the data that we had, you know, I think the decision was a very data-driven, very thorough decision that we had made when we evaluated all the companies that had applied. As I mentioned, we reviewed their operations. We got references. We spoke to those individuals that were managing them in other sites, and we made those decisions. Obviously, what I know today, I can't unknow, and so you would make different decisions based upon the information that we have today.
Madam Chair.
Representative Detmer.
And with that knowledge of doing your interviews and everything, were you aware of some of the Monterey's issues in Chicago?
Mr. Tulte?
Madam Chair, Representative, the committee was aware of Juan Gaitan's police history that had happened over 20 years ago, and we were aware of an incident that had happened in Soldier Field with individuals selling wristbands that gave partial access into the stadium.
Madam Chair, and going forward, how are background checks working during the transition of the firms currently, and will there be a distinction between security and guest service roles? Maybe you might want to explain the difference between security and guest service roles.
Mr. Talty.
Madam Chair, Representative, you know, one thing is with Wayland and G4S, we expect them to follow the state statute as it outlines for protective agents. If there is protective agent work being done, such as Mr. Cook outlined, searching your bag, working the magnetometer, restricting access to areas, we expect those individuals to be meet the minimum standard of the statute that they provide that service in accordance with that. We do have individuals such as wheelchair runners, and ticket takers and people who work guest service booths that take guest complaints and things like that. Those are actually SMG employees. Those are customer service roles. And We use those are not protective agent roles. Whalen could provide some individuals that provide some of those same services that we have employees, so they could take tickets, they could work a guest service booth, and I would expect that they meet the minimum standard that's required in the statute for those individuals.
Madam Chair.
Representative Emmer.
Mr. Talty, who's in charge of guest services at the stadium currently, and has that role changed? Is there a different person in charge now?
Mr. Talty.
Madam Chair, Representative, guest experience is run by our Director of Event Services, who has a team underneath him. It's a very extensive team. That roles have not changed since taking on the change or the firms that we have.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The security firms deal with hundreds of people that are employed by these firms. What I'm curious is if an employee is convicted of a disqualifying criminal offense, how is that tracked? Who tracks it? And how is that disposed of, or what's the disposition of the two firms that are involved, for example? Which firm tracks that, tracks current employees to ensure that during the process of employment they're not convicted of criminal offenses? And how does that work?
Mr. Talby.
Madam Chair, Representative, each of the firms, G4S and Whalen, are required to submit fingerprints of their employees to the BCA for a background check, and they receive those results from the BCA. Those individuals are not employed in the stadium until they have received those clearances from the BCA on their background check, and that's how they become, they get to work. They're then issued their ID, and they can work then at the stadium once they receive those clearances.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So once they're employed, do they do any additional, when you say fingerprints, do they do swabs, internal swabs of their, in their mouths, or do they actually do fingerprints? And do the, do checks once an employee is in fact in service?
Mr. Talty.
Madam Chair, Representative, my understanding is that it's just what's required under the statute is a fingerprint background check. And I believe Mr. Cook said an FBI, I think it's BCA and FBI background checks. I don't believe that they do swabs or anything like that. I can tell you that G4S, who is managing the 24/7 security for us, also requires drug tests and of their officers. That's their corporate policy. And we expect that under our contract, we expect the companies to follow their corporate policies as well as the minimum state standards when they're executing backgrounds. Background checks. The statute, my understanding is that there isn't an ongoing requirement for backgrounds. Once they pass the background and become a protective agent, I don't believe there's any requirement of background checking them. If I remember correctly, Whalen does do regular background checks on their employees. Because there's not an ongoing background requirement, they do that as a part of their corporate policy.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Guam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I'm trying to find out. I'm a little bit confused because I thought the contract with Monterey was for security, and I'm hearing about these customer or guest ambassadors and customer service people that they had on their payroll in the stadium. Did that not raise a red flag that they were going beyond the scope of the contract?
Mr. Talty.
Madam Chair, Representative, Monterey in their contract could provide staff and customer service roles, but our expectation is no matter what role they were serving, that they had to meet the minimum state standard for protective agents. If they were doing security work, it doesn't matter whether they were called event ambassadors. Our expectation would have been that they would have been met the minimum standard for protective agents. Just because they made up a title doesn't mean that they that allowed them to have different requirements. And that's one of the reasons why we terminated the contract, was because they did not meet those minimum state standards as outlined in our contract.
Representative Kwan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really don't understand why guests, and did you or anyone overseeing and managing the stadium have any idea of the number of people they were letting in? I mean, it appeared as if in the report and other indicators that they just handed out all sorts of T-shirts and stuff and let a great deal of people in, and some denied they were employees. Did you really know how many people they had access into the stadium?
Mr. Tulte?
Madam Chair, Representative, first let me, our security procedures and plans are very comprehensive, layered approach. It involves federal, state, local law enforcement, as well as private security, physical security measures in and about the stadium. It's a matter of practice that we hand out the security uniforms at the stadium because if those are out in the public, that is a credential that would allow people access to the stadium. So we restrict that to be handed out at the stadium. So to be issuing shirts, uniforms, is not that's a normal practice. That's part of our security practice at the stadium. And we have a certain number of people that are required to work the stadium based upon how many magnetometers we have, based upon how many access points we want to staff, based upon the requirements of the event, what it needs to make sure that the event can run smoothly. The number of people that are needed, when we were looking at the individuals that were coming in, Monterey was not bringing in excess of people that were required in the number that was asked for them to provide that security plan.
Representative Kwan?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if I'm reassured that SMG was aware of all of the people. It'd be nice if the committee was informed with the total number of these uniforms that were handed out per event. And, you know, so we had an idea of just the quantity of number, and that might help us understand who might have fallen through the cracks during this process. And I did have one final follow-up question. It has to do with the testifier referred to, you know, the processes and procedures that you had, you know, and you've got. Obviously, there was a failure in those, and, you know, can you give to the committee the existing at the time policies and procedures, and then the new improved corrective policies and procedures, so we can see, you know, what you've done to make sure this doesn't happen in the future, and see your thought processes on improvement, because maybe we can, you know, reassure the members of this committee that you haven't left any additional holes open, because frankly, Minnesota was a little bit of a laughing stock when our security allowed those people to, you know, hang from the rafters and smuggle stuff in, you know, that might make reluctant some groups to come to our state for events.
Mr. Tulte, are you able to provide that data to us, please?
Madam Chair, I think that some of the numbers that Representative is asking for are non-public data under for security reasons, and therefore, if we were to tell you how many shirts are required to work events, and that is talking about our security plans and procedures, and I'm not at liberty to discuss those and share those with you for the protection of the people. I can tell you that our plans and our procedures that we have devised at the stadium are some of the best in the country. We have other stadiums come visit us to review our procedures, to look at them as a model. We have people come to the stadium on a regular basis. We have a lot of resources on all of our events. We go above and beyond the Department of Homeland Security minimum standards of best practices, if you will, for stadium operations in terms of security. We have federal, local law enforcement, as well as physical security measures in place and acting at the stadium at all times. I've been doing this a long time, and we have more resources in this facility working on a game from a lot of different agencies than I have in the past. And I'm very proud of what we've put together, and I believe that we have a very safe and efficient building.
Mr. Tulte, so you talked about that the SHRD is kind of the ticket in. Is there any other form of identification that individuals that are providing security at the stadium receive at all besides the SHRD, besides the uniform, I should say?
Madam Chair, yes, there is. The SHRD is just one piece of it. And the reason we give out the SHRD at the stadium is because we want to make double sure that someone doesn't have a SHRD, and you know, if human nature, there's an error and someone doesn't see the second credential. There is a credential that's required as well. That's a stadium-issued badge that we issue to all individuals that work at the stadium.
And Mr. Tulte, is that something that SMG provides, or is that something the security firm that you've hired provides?
Madam Chair, those credentials are printed in our command center down in the in our joint operations center. So the security company actually prints them, but we approve those applications.
And so, Mr. Tulte, wouldn't you have seen then you had individuals that had either felony convictions or all of these other problems as part of that list? Because if they print that list, I assume that you have access to that. Did you ever do an audit of that to verify whether these individuals were qualified or had the training or had the BCA check to be performing these duties?
Madam Chair, we did not do an audit on those individuals, those names. We get those lists from lots of different, from all the companies in the stadium, from food and beverage to security to merchandise, and we did not run those against any list of backgrounds or anything like that.
And Mr. Tulte, do you plan on doing that in the future?
Madam Chair, as I mentioned, we are looking at doing those SNAP audits and those type of things moving forward so we can review their records to ensure that they are following the statutes as they need to outline.
And is it your plan to only do the audits if you find that there is some red flag that's raised, or are you intending to do an audit regardless of whether you think they are performing or not?
Madam Chair, we plan to do those kind of ad hoc audits and those, give a random audits on a regular basis.
And if I could, Monterey was under a 3-year contract, and they had already been spent, 15 months maybe on the job? Is that the ballpark figure? And during that entire time, under a 3-year contract, they've only almost spent almost half of their contract time. You didn't do any audit of them. It wasn't until something came up, correct?
Madam Chair, actually, we had been operating. They received their contract in March. They had not started operating in the stadium until July, when the stadium opened. And so there, when we got the launched our investigation in early June, we'd only been operating about 10 months.
And in just looking at this, too, with your whole audit system that you have, so you say that you have now greater authority to come in. Does that mean that you are going to do maybe these smaller audits, but then in addition to that, you're going to do a yearly review that is top to bottom scrubbed to make sure that everything is going as planned?
Madam Chair, nothing's off the table, but I haven't. We haven't determined that specifically yet.
Okay. We'll probably talk about that a little bit more later. I did have a couple other questions based upon what other members said. Can you tell me, when did the Maslin investigation begin? Was that July, August?
Madam Chair, the Maslin investigation began in June.
In June. So it was after the report. Is that correct?
Sorry, Madam Chair, after the report.
So it was after the news articles that came out. Is that correct?
We had the news article, as well as the knowing about the board of private detectives was doing an inquiry. Those two things led us to launch our own investigation as well.
Okay, because I know that the board of the detective board received notice, I believe it was May 10th. And so you're saying so it was June was when you decided to do the Maslin report. And was that a decision that was made by SMG? Was that made by MSFA? Or how did that work? Can you tell me?
Madam Chair, one point as well. The board may have received their inquiry May 10th. I wasn't made aware until late May because the board never reached out to us directly and said that they were doing an inquiry into Monterey. We learned that from Monterey that there was an inquiry. The investigation by Maslin was a joint discussion and decision by the authority and by us.
And so do you have in your new contract with Wayland and with G4, do you have a requirement that if they are ever given a notification of problems within their company that they are required to report to you that they have this problem? And I do believe it was a public notice on the May 10th for the detective board, and maybe Mr. Cook can nod. Is it the May 10th? Was that a public? Was that given as public notice at all?
The May 10th notice was the notice we sent to Monterey.
Okay, and is that public?
Is that a public notice?
Mm-hmm.
It would not have been, Chair. It's part of the investigative process.
I shouldn't do this. I should have you come to the table, actually. My apologies. I just thought I could get a quick nod or no, so my apologies. Mr. Hodson, welcome to the committee again. If you can please state your name for the record.
Richard Hodson. The process when a complaint is made to the board, it initiates it to the extent, depending on the nature of the complaint, if a citizen were saying they're unhappy with something or a client or even another license holder that they believe a license holder is engaged in misconduct, the board has the authority to initiate investigation a variety of ways that could be with the assistance of counsel from the Attorney General's office assigned. Given the fact that Mr. Cook has been in the industry so long, he will often do at least a preliminary investigation with his staff. So the investigative materials typically are not a matter of public record, at least at the initial point of the investigation. At some point, if it leads to licensing action, sanctions, hearings, different things, then that status changes. As Mr. Cook indicated, these are all proceedings subject to Chapter 13. This is a corporate entity, so it has fewer privacy rights than a private individual does under 1341, but they still do have some investigative privacy rights, so that's reason that it does not typically become a matter of public record, even for a corporate entity.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Hodson. So, Mr. Tulte, you said that Monterey had notified you towards the end of May that they were being investigated by the detective board regarding their renewal process. And so at that point, can you talk to me a little bit? Have you changed your process now so that for the future, the Wayland, the G4 folks, if something like this were to happen, are they required to notify you immediately?
Madam Chair, one of the things that you'll notice in the Maslin report was that one of the findings was that they failed to notify us in a timely fashion of issues that were arise. The expectation of the contract, even with Monterey, was that they were to inform us of these type of things that were going on.
Okay, but then again, so for Wayland and G4, do you have some safety language in place with your contracts with them to make sure that they are bound to do this?
Madam Chair, those provisions did not change in our contract with them, that they were that we're supposed to be notified.
Okay. I just want to go back a little bit to the RFP process and how we came to be to have Monterey here in Minnesota. Can you give me a little description of what SMG's relationship has been with Monterey? Did having that relationship in Chicago influence how they came to be here in Minnesota?
Madam Chair, Monterey Security does provide security at Soldier Field, an SMG-managed facility. We also manage other, as I mentioned, five other NFL facilities. So we have relationships at those facilities with other firms as well. You know, I spoke to the GMs at each of those facilities. We visited those operations. Just having operated at a SMG facility doesn't give them any more, credence that they are the right firm over any other firm. We let the data drive us, the committee, to where we got to. We did take into consideration that they had operations at other NFL facilities and took the, insights from those GMs and the recommendations or comments that they had made for each of the different firms when we spoke to them. We took those into consideration. So, yes, I did speak with the GM about Monterey and Chicago, but, I took that as a data point along with all the other data points. The committee, when we were evaluating Monterey, Monterey had a history of recruiting minorities, underserved communities. That was a very important point for us. They had been awarded contracts, since the contract in Soldier Field. They had been awarded contracts such as Notre Dame, the Chicago Cubs, Chicago White Sox, Chicago Fire, with the NFL, with the federal government doing presidential visits and NATO summit. So those rang very true to us. We also got positive recommendations the committee did from concert promoters, other NFL teams, as well as those ones I just mentioned. So, you know, that was weighed heavily there. We also were very impressed with their training standards that they had had in Chicago and their training records that they had trained staff in Chicago, you know, as we looked at all the different operations.
Well, Mr. Tolte, can you explain to me, Mr. Gaetan referred to the whole process of the bid as SMG reached out to him to apply for this contract. Did you at any time reach out to any other firm asking them to submit their bid for the RFP process? Did you, any of the five other firms that represent SMG in other stadiums, did you ask any of them? Did you reach out to Whalen or to G4 or any of the other groups that you had interviewed in December of 2015?
Madam Chair, I did not reach out to Monterey or any other firms at any time during the process to encourage them to attend.
Did anybody from your office here in Minnesota for SMG, did they reach out to them?
No.
And I'm just going by what Mr. Gaetan had said. And here, let me just read it. I've got the quote. Gaetan stated that his reason for applying is because a company called SMG was awarded the project in Minnesota for the Vikings Stadium, and they asked him if he would be interested in providing services there. So who within SMG asked him, I guess?
Madam Chair, I'm not... I honestly don't know who would have done that.
Can you find out for us?
I can ask.
That'd be great. And can you tell me, given the relationship and the experience that you had, or SMG, I should say, you represent SMG, can you tell me, given everything that happened in Chicago, was that ever brought up? You had mentioned that you were impressed by their training standards that they had, and you were impressed with their training record. Given the fact that in Chicago they had several problems with their training standards and their training records, did that ever raise a red flag to you that maybe importing that problem here to Minnesota would be problematic?
Madam Chair, the committee, when we were interviewing all the firms, were aware of Monterey's, Mr. Gaetan's specific history with the Chicago Police Department, as well as the incidences that Monterey had. I believe there was the incident I spoke of earlier in Soldier Field with two individuals that sold wristbands, as well as I believe there was some incident of they received a fine and two-year probation for their initial application in the state of Illinois for the licensure. You know, we talked to them about that. They had changed principles. Mr. Gaetan was a partner with another individual during that time. They had changed that. Mr. Gaetan was the sole owner. We had asked questions about those during the interviews, the whole committee did, and he had talked to us about what they had learned and what they had changed and what they had done differently since that early 2000s license issue in Illinois. Additionally, as the Mr. Gook outlined, Monterey had a license in Minnesota prior to even submitting their bid and for work at U.S. Bank Stadium.
But Mr. Tolte, at any point did you think, given the fact that they've had problems with background checks, with providing proper training hours, having people access the stadium without the proper credentials because they had an individual sell them on the sideline, did that give you any pause of maybe we need to be more aggressive in our audit clause that we have in place and just kind of keep an eye out for this to make sure that everything is okay?
Madam Chair, you know, we had talked to Monterey as well as we had talked to individuals at the different facilities that Monterey provides services for on those specific questions, and we did vet those and talked about those as the committee as a whole. One of the reasons why we have those audit provisions in our contract now is so that we can go through and do audits. Not all contracts and other, venues I've worked in the past have those type of audit provisions, but we put those in here so that we always would have the ability to have clear and open transparency into their operation.
But, Mr. Tulte, you realize an audit is only good if it's actually performed and that the individual understands that it's going to be performed. So can you talk to me a little bit of why not audit them, given the fact that they had all of these problems in Chicago? Were you aware that there was perhaps familial relationship in Chicago's with their general manager from SMG with Monterey themselves? And did that give you any pause on as far as recommendations go? Did you look at any of those things? And did you think that maybe we need to do a more diligent audit practice here to make sure that we are protecting the Minnesota's asset of the stadium?
Madam Chair, we... you know, in our contract, we had the audit provision in place, and when we had, and 10 months into operation, when we had seen that there were, we had red flags, we didn't wait. We executed that audit and did a very thorough independent audit into Monterey and their practices up here. You know, independently of, I think the RFP process is independent of how they actually operated. You know, the RFP process was you know, very thorough, and the data we had at the time was the decision that was driven to the community, the committee. They did not execute. They did not execute to the expectations of our contract. We moved very quickly and got rid of them and canceled their contract in the middle of an NFL season.
Well, Mr. Tulte, I guess what concerns me is kind of piggybacking off of what Representative Vogel had made a point, is the fact that you only initiated the investigation after an outside group noticed that there was a problem. And so my concern is that with the new security firms, the two of them that you have in place, I don't want to see it happen where the same situation, as long as no outside group finds anything, all is well, and nobody knows about it except for us. That being said, you had mentioned earlier that on the contracts, this was on Representative, I think Representative Uglum was talking about this, you had mentioned that your contract with the MSFA board is only that you need to get the approval of the executive director. So when you did the new contracts for Whalen and G4, did you only receive the approval from the executive director from MSFA?
Madam Chair, when we did the new contracts with Whalen and G4S, we did follow a provision in our contract and receive written approval from the MSFA, the executive director.
And so there's nobody else that was involved, no board member, nothing. It was just the executive director from MSFA.
Madam Chair, Chair Bekich was involved in the discussions with us in and around the investigation as well as the hiring of Whalen and G4S.
And, Mr. Tulte, you're not aware of any vote being taken by the MSFA board to approve these two new contracts. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of any vote that was taken.
And Mr. Tulte, what's the value of this contract? I know when we look at the numbers for Monterey, they had earned at that point up to $4.1 million. So what is this? Are you able to say what the value of this contract is with these two entities?
Madam Chair, the value of the contracts, there's not a set price because it's basically we agree on an hourly rate, and then depending on the events that we have and the services that are needed for the year, we pay for those as we go along. So it's more of a time and materials type contract. I can tell you that, yes, Monterey at the time, about, I want to say that figure that you just mentioned, it was about July-ish time frame, that they had earned for the last fiscal year a little over $4 million. And I would expect that the contracts, with the activity that we have at the stadium, the number of events that we do, and the success that we are having at the stadium, I'd imagine that the contracts would be in similar areas, but I can't give you a dollar figure specifically because it totally depends on the activity and the events that we have.
So this gets back to, again, then just the billing process and the fact that we still have this outstanding billing problem with Monterey, and so we're reliant on, unless they're audited, we're reliant on the new firms of being honest with us when it comes to the billing piece of things in order for us to know whether we're overpaying them or not. And can you tell me if at any point we're going to get the money back from Monterey that they overbilled us, and when that investigation will be complete and when you'll be reporting back to the legislature on that?
Madam Chair, we are currently still investigating the potential billing irregularities. We've hired a forensic accounting firm to work with our outside counsel to review those. And then nothing's off the table in terms of what when we find out the data that we have, then we can make the proper steps to move forward, as well as the proper steps to move forward with the new companies to understand what we find in the billing, and then to be able to put into place audits or bill in a different way or different things like that, so that we can more easily review and understand what it is that they were doing.
And so will you be getting the money back if this truly occurred, the overbilling?
Madam Chair, nothing's off the table at this point.
I represent a few.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I have several comments and questions as a result of conversation that has been had here. The first point that I would want to make, and would maybe direct this to you, Mr. Talty, is I see here in the report that was completed by the Minnesota Board of Private Detectives and Protective Agents, the 47-page report here, I'm on page 41, that, and this was with regard to the comment that I believe I heard you make, that the people who were granted security clearance were presented a shirt when they arrived. But then there were also identifying lanyards that would be commensurate with, you know, having been given a shirt, all the security personnel. And I see on this page that one of the items that was observed on Monday, September 11th, when the executive director, I believe it was the executive director, attended the Vikings New Orleans Saints football game, is that he observed that the identification card that was being worn by one of the security personnel had no picture and no name of the individual wearing that security badge. So he was wearing the identified shirt that he had been presented, but no name, no picture, no identifying. And I believe I heard you say that your agency, actually printed those security cards. So that's a significant breach, and I'm just wondering if there's an explanation for that and if I've heard all of this correctly.
Mr. Tolte.
Madam Chair, Representative, those IDs that you're referring to, there are individuals that have one of the things that we have to do, because there could be new employees that we haven't gotten a picture for yet. There are badges that have numbers on them that are printed. And then when those are issued out, there is a separate log that those individuals have. They sign on the log, and then they're given those badges without names until their badge is printed. And that could be one of the badges that was spotted. It would be my guess.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would like a follow-up on that, you know, some sort of a reporting, if there is one, on who was, and again, there's a lot of redaction in this report, in all of the reports that I've seen, but I think it would be, given the number of security breaches that apparently have occurred, it would be of great interest, I think, to ensure that there's a procedure in place, actually, for knowing who, in fact, is there, and have their credentials been vetted. So I would just ask for that. And I would also, Madam Chair, like to thank you, follow up on one other thing that I've been thinking about as I've been reading this. It just appears to me, and this again was initiated by my colleague, Representative Vogel, but the incredible lack of, whether it's lack of judgment or lack of oversight on the CEO of Monterey. There just appears to be a real lack of integrity with regard to this individual, and I can't help but think as I'm reading, and I've been looking at page 40 of the report that I just referenced, from somebody who was in his employ, but First, I'll just mention that my research shows me that this individual was a former Chicago police officer, that he'd been accused of misconduct in several cases. When he was questioned by the private detective board, he claimed that he was exonerated in both cases and that press reports about him were false. However, it was revealed, and I could have this not all just perfect, but revealed that he was suspended for 3 months in one of those scenarios and then resigned from the department before that subsequent case could be settled. So it appears a lack of integrity on the part of this individual, the CEO of the company that was secured. But the other thing that's really concerning to me is that it was revealed that he claimed that he was a part-time police officer, detective, I should say, in the Bridgeview, Illinois department. But the Bridgeview department says that he never completed his training and was never paid. And so it would seem to me that a simple resume check, you know, I don't know if there was a background check performed on the CEO of the company that millions of dollars of resources are going to be expended, was done. But a simple due diligence of checking one's resume may have revealed this, but this is the individual who, in their employ, I'll maybe just back up. I'm, again, looking at page 40 here. I see that there were statements that were made by, and the name is redacted, who was an individual through the Service Employees International Union, the SEIU, and referenced that Monterey did bus in employees from Chicago. The employees performed security functions but did not have background checks done. He was informed also that a woman by the name of Patty Gayton, and I don't know who that is, Perez, had asked to falsify documents. These documents included, and this is from the report, the affidavit of training certificates. This individual provided an email that referred to changing the dates in the computer in order to meet compliance. I mean, the list goes on and on about the cash groups that were secured. Who knows who these people were? I mean, this may all have been avoided. And a really serious situation here that we have found ourselves in now precluded had effective due diligence been done, on the part of your organization, or I'm not really sure who, but I'm very troubled by this. And again, I've not read the whole thing, but the more I read, the more concerned I am. I'm delighted to hear you report that the two security agencies that have been contracted going forward are interested in not repeating any of these egregious mistakes, and that they're interested in transparency. And I would add that as the very minimum that Minnesotans can expect, and that we, the legislature, can expect. So, anyway, I don't have a question here.
I think what might be helpful, Representative Pugh, is if Mr. Cook, if you could come down and just speak to how the whole credential process, what the statute says, what you're required to do. So for anybody that's coming in as security, how do they get the shirt? How do they get the badge? What does the badge include? If you can kind of walk us through that.
Madam Chair, thank you. Well, in regards to the ID first, there are statutes that state the ID must have the picture of the employee, must have the name of the company, must be signed by the license holder, must have a brief physical description of them. Okay. What I observed at the end of the evening, they were handing over their shirts to some people behind a counter. These are Monterey employees. They're also handing over these ID cards. I mean, these ID cards were just generic at the time. As far as the shirts go, you know, there really isn't any provision. You know, they need to be identified as security on the ID card, but not necessarily the shirt. What was your other question, madam?
Well, I'm going to just pause you there then. You know, Mr. Tulsi, given that these are the state requirements of what you have to have a photo on there and everything that Mr. Cook outlined, who at SMG the Minnesota Sports Affiliate, you can't answer for them, but how is it that an individual could be walking around with a red shirt on that has this badge? How did the badges get printed in the first place and it didn't raise a red flag of this is not right?
Madam Chair, the statute is...
Especially given, I mean, as you mentioned several times, SMG, huge company, many facilities that you're doing stadiums, so this is not your first time at the rodeo. You know what these badges are supposed to look like. Can you kind of comment on that at all?
Madam Chair, the badges that we give out do not necessarily... those are stadium credentials, not necessarily protective agent licenses. They can be separate and different, and my understanding is Monterey was using a different form for their protective agents that had all the things that Mr. Cook just outlined. They were not stadium credentials. We did a separate stadium credential.
Well, okay, so, but even still, if you saw folks that are walking around without the photo piece of it, which is required by state statute, that didn't give you any pause at all, or?
Madam Chair, I don't know the statute inside out. Mr. Cook probably answer, but I don't believe that you have to have it displayed at all times when you're working.
Mr. Cook?
You have to have it displayed at all times when you're working.
Okay. I don't know the statute inside out.
You know what I think might be helpful? We'll make a copy of it and send it just so that we can kind of prevent that for the future. That might be helpful. I've got a couple other members that have questions. Representative Green?
Madam Chair, just wanted to make one follow-up statement that I didn't make. So back to Representative Vogel's challenge about needing to, and gosh, I don't have my notes right in front of me, but he made the point so well about the need for an internal audit of procedures and policies, you know, proactive. Had SMG been inspecting its own expectation, I heard you reference several times that, you know, the entity expected and whatnot, but had there been an internal audit control in place to be inspecting your expectation, much of this might have been, you may have identified those red flags prior to having had a lot of this brought to your attention. So that would just be a call to action and a point I would make. Thanks.
Thanks, Representative Pugh. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Tolte, you know, as I sit here and listen to this, it was tough enough to read through these reports and listen to the violations that have occurred. And then I hear you say that you investigated this company for 5 months before you hired them. Is that right?
Mr. Tolte?
Madam Chair, Representative, the process for the RFP was 5 months. I didn't specifically say we investigated in 5 months. The overall RFP process was a five-month-long process that we interviewed all the different companies. We asked them questions. We had follow-up interviews as well as we talked to individuals at each of the different venues that they operate in, as well as we did site visits.
Representative Green?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We'll laugh for all that, and then looking at the reports that Monterey had some of these same violations from before, plus the jaded past, I guess, of if that's a proper word, of the executive director of Monterey. And you tell me that you did all this research and still this is what happens. And the big thing now, I know that Monterey is gone, but we're moving forward, and we're living in an increasingly dangerous world. And this is very concerning, and, you know, the events that happened just in the last few days. And people walking around now, and you don't even know that they're supposed to have a photo badge. And you talked about people that are hired that are not in protective service roles that don't get background checks. They're also working in the stadium. We've got thank you, Madam Chair, for calling this meeting. This is something that is just not being looked at properly, I don't think. When you look at all the violations we've had here, all the questions we've got, and it seems like we're just not getting, I'm not getting reassured that things are going to be better in the future. And the other statement that you made is now you've hired two security firms just in case something happens. And that's not really very assuring. So,
Representative Ubben.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a quick question of Mr. Talty. Is Monterey still providing security services in Chicago for the Chicago Bears as we sit here and go through all of this. Are they still your preferred vendor in Chicago?
Mr. Talty.
Madam Chair, Representative, they are still providing services down in Chicago, and my focus obviously is Minneapolis and not Chicago and the internet workings of Chicago.
Madam Chair.
Representative Uglum.
I just have one further comment, and that is, really, after all this? Thank you.
Okay. Members, we are approaching the 1 o'clock hour. Mr. Talty, appreciate you coming here today. Like I mentioned to everyone earlier, we will have another hearing because we have not had an opportunity to talk to MSFA. I know that I have some questions. I know other members have some questions, too, regarding this whole process. I apologize to Mr. Beckage and Mr. Evans for having you here, but hopefully this was helpful to you to get a kind of a flavor of where members view things. Members, please save your documents so that staff do not have to make copies of them again. So put it in your save folder, and we'll have those prepared for you for the next time. And we'll be in touch as far as when we will have the next hearing. And with that, members, as promised, we're going to quit at 1. We are adjourned.
No, we know that. But that's not. Well, but we know.